Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the third episode of the Calcio Land Podcast of the Week. So today, we're going to give some updates on the players you guys constantly ask about, Milinkovic-Savic, Alexandro. We'll get into the moves Juve has done this week, and then we'll do a roundup of transfer news in general, and then we're going to end on a little bit of NBA chat between Alex and I and talk a little bit about Anthony Bourdain's sudden passing away, which was really quite shocking. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our great friend, producer, co-host, Alex Goldberg. And Alex, I know you have a passion for Ajax. It's a team you follow closely, and I was thinking that there's quite a few of their players that have ties to Serie A. They've been linked to Serie A teams. This also might be of interest to fans of other leagues because some of these names could pop up elsewhere. So off the top of my head, I was thinking there's the center back, Delight. There's that Ziyech, who we talked about a little bit with our friend John Solano. There's Kluivert, of course, another player linked to Roma. And then there's the bizarre case of the winger Younes with Napoli, who's technically on the contract with them, but we don't know if he'll be going there or not. So I wanted to ask you, if you had to describe these players to our listeners, how would you do it, buddy?
Yeah, so I mean, with Ajax players and Eredivisie players in general, it kind of follows the exact saying you have about prospects. They're a blank canvas. It's really hard to know exactly what they're going to turn out to be. So the first thing I caution everybody when I speak about these players, I am not guaranteeing that any of these players amount to anything. But I also, before I get into the players specifically, I'm also sick of hearing, oh, well, that player is going to be another Memphis Depay. First, that's not a terribly bad thing, okay? Memphis Depay went to Manchester United, and we all know, David, Man U, when Depay was there, was as dysfunctional as possible. So to say Depay is a complete bust really isn't true. He had 19 goals, 13 assists for Lyon this past season, just 24. So I wouldn't negatively judge the Eredivisie based on Depay's time at Man U. With that said, let's talk about some of the players you mentioned. I'm going to start in terms of the player I'm most confident in and then go down the list. A short list. I won't spiel for too long. The player you mentioned, Matthias De Ligt. De Ligt is really talented. I mean, I want to just say De Ligt, but I think it's supposed to be De Ligt. 18-year-old center back. Already an insane amount of experience, played in the Europa League final, was partners with Davinson Sanchez, who now is the center back for Tottenham. This kid is about as sure of a thing as an 18-year-old can be in terms of, and I know a lot of the top teams are already knocking on the door. Probably seems likely he'll leave this summer, leave Ajax. Not only is he supremely talented, just from a physical standpoint, but he's a leader. So I don't know how credible it was. I can't remember who cited it. So excuse me if it was someone credible, if it was you guys, if it wasn't. But I saw Juventus might be interested in De Ligt. He is not only a center back you can project on in terms of talent, but he has some insanely impressive leadership qualities. Just a real quick 10-second story. One of my favorite players for Ajax, David Neres, who was a really promising right winger. They were playing PSV earlier this season. They lost 3-0 away to PSV. Neres, just out of emotion, wanted to walk off the pitch. De Ligt, 18-year-old Matthias De Ligt, takes Neres and makes him applaud the away fans. I mean, this kid has got some great, great makeup. So he's the surest thing, in my opinion, out of all the players on Ajax. Then, of course, Hakim Ziyech, 25 years old, so not really a prospect compared to some of the other players. Very polished offensively. Of course, Roma is his biggest tie right now. And you know, I was really passionate, David, the last time we talked about Ziyech, about how good he is, and maybe he would turn my allegiance to Roma and Serie A. I still mostly stand by that. The one thing that was brought to my attention about Ziyech is his makeup, his personality is a little questionable, which is fine. Sometimes talent wins out, but that does raise my ears a little bit. That does make me a little cautious, because he can't come into Serie A thinking he's the bee's knees and that he's going to boss the league all on his own. And I did say, when we talked about Ziyech before, the system has to be tailor-made for his strengths. It cannot expose him. He's a CM who really has no defensive qualities. So, and he's not a CAM. So he really does need, if it was DeFrancesco would really need to put him in the best position to use his amazing passing abilities. Another Ajax player, of course, Kluivert. You and John Solano talked about him a little bit on the last podcast. I really like Kluivert, but I tweeted about it today. Much of what Kluivert is being bought on is his potential and who his father is. And
yeah.
I do think Kluivert is overrated. I really do. This year, he had 10 goals and 5 assists, which is good, but it's not groundbreaking, especially for the Eredivisie. And 3 of those goals were all in one game. It was an amazing hat trick. I really recommend anybody to go on YouTube and watch that hat trick. It shows you what he can do, hitting from deep, really good dribbler. But this guy is far from a finished product. And for Roma fans to think that they're getting a young Gabriel Jesus or Neymar or anything, that couldn't be further from the truth. He's got a long way to go. And last one quickly that you had mentioned, Amin Yunus, not a big fan of him. At one point, maybe I was. He had a really promising year last year for Ajax, but he's now 24 years old. He got completely derailed this year when he had an injury and totally lost his spot at Ajax. His makeup is really questionable. At one point when he returned from injury, he had refused to come in a game as a sub, and then he ended up playing for Ajax's youth team. Not big on Amin Yunus. And as you said, there's some interesting things going on with him in Napoli and whether he signed a contract or not. Safe to say, not a big fan of the player. So, you know, those are the players that you had mentioned on Ajax. Any other jewels? I already mentioned David Neres. I remember in the middle of the year, maybe there was an AC Milan link to David Neres. I think David Neres is really promising. He actually reminds me of Douglas Costa, both Brazilians. But I definitely think Neres probably needs another year in the Eredivisie. The only other one worth mentioning is Frankie de Jong on Ajax. Experts, not me, true experts who actually know what they're talking about, really rate de Jong. I know Steven Ganavis from Scouted Football likes de Jong. The only thing with de Jong at this point is he hasn't really found his position yet. Might be center back, might be center mid, CDM, we'll see. But he's definitely a promising player, but he'll need more time at Ajax. So I listed a wide variety of players. De Ligt, an 18-year-old center back. Ziyech, a 25-year-old CM. Kluivert, a left winger. As I said at the top, they're far from a sure thing. But David, if I'm going to put my reputation on one player 5 years from now, it's Matthijs De Ligt. I think he just has too much going for him to be a bust. Any team would be stupid not to test the waters for De Ligt. I don't care if you have 5 great center backs already. When you find somebody who could be a franchise-type center back, you at least need to sniff it out and see if it can happen, because I think he's a real game-changer, a franchise-type center back. So there's my Ajax spiel. If you want to know anything more about Ajax, you can just follow me on Twitter, but that's always a dangerous option.
Thanks so much. A, you pronounced their name so much better than I, so note from me, De Ligt. So, yeah, you're right. He has been linked to Juve. It sounds like if Benatia leaves, which is not out of the question, he might be the player they target, and he'd be, I think, like 13 years younger, so that would make a lot of sense. So that's great stuff. So I'm going to give you a chance to catch your breath. I know we had started a new segment on Monday with standing updates on players that we get asked about a ton. And in true Calcioland fashion, we skipped it on Wednesday. There had been no updates, but today we have a couple. There might not be groundbreaking updates, but I want to talk a little bit about 3 figures that we go over, that we get asked about over and over again. So, Alex, let's start with everyone's favorite. What do you got for me today?
All right, David. So, yeah, as you said, these are still the 3 categories we had in the standing update segment back on Monday, but with a different spin. So starting off with Milinkovic-Savic, David, what do you make of SMS liking some Manchester United-related posts on Instagram?
Yeah, so I saw some people were tweeting me about it. Now, you and I didn't even know that Savic has an Instagram account, so much for great research. That's more on me. So in any event, he does have one, and I saw some people were tweeting me that he liked some of the announcements, I guess, on Fred and some other things on Man United. But, you know, I have to tell you, when I think of, like, the shadiest transfer rumors, I think, you know, liking things on Instagram or following someone on Twitter is probably the least credible transfer rumor to me, other than when you read someone, some shady site tweeting about a player looking for a house in the city. I never buy any of those off the bat. So while there have been supposedly these likes on Man United, you know, pictures, there was also, he liked the reply of a Juve fan that told him, oh, I really hope you come play for us. So I really don't put any stock on these sorts of things. If we went by this, Pato would have gone back to Milan like 3 years ago, because he's constantly liking stuff there. And I could go on and on again on how this stuff really doesn't matter. Now, what does matter is today, Savic was with his national team, and he was asked about his future, and he did say that it'll be decided after the World Cup. Now, you know, I always take public statements with a grain of salt, but to me, the timing makes sense. We've talked a lot on the podcast on how Lazio is really good at selling players. I think they're going to take their time. It makes sense that they wouldn't just jump on early interest and just try to see if the price goes up even more, especially if he has a great World Cup.
I wonder if Nemanja Matic can do some recruiting while with the Serbian national team. That'll be interesting. All right, so David, the next one. Does the fact that Darmian to Juve transfer has stalled, does that have any impact on Alexandro's future?
Not really. Like, I never saw these connected. To me, this would be like the equivalent of saying Sturaro could go to Manchester United, and that's relevant to Juve's potential acquisition of Martial. Like, to me, completely different level of player. Like, Darmian's been buried on the bench by Mourinho. Alexandro, though he's had a rough season, is still one of the elite left backs in the world, so I really don't see much of a connection. Now, of course, the more wing backs on Juve's squad, the better, I guess, the chances that Alexandro leaves. But when you look at the landscape, Juve needs a lot of help at the wing back position. So they've lost Lichtsteiner, that's more on the right side of things. On the left side, Asamoah is going to join Inter. We've seen Spinazzola, who came back, had a surgery on his MCL, so he'll be out for a while. So the fact that Darmian to Juve has stalled, if you're a Man United fan, like, look at the positive. I don't think it really has much of an impact on Alexandro. To give an update on Darmian as well, it looks like Manchester United wants the full transfer fee that they paid Torino a few years ago. I would say good luck with that, because A, Darmian is older, and two, some of his transfer fee has been amortized. It doesn't surprise to me that Juve is offering essentially the amortized value that's left on Man United's books for Darmian. So I don't see a huge connection to this. We'll get into it in the question, but Juve is looking at some other wing backs as well.
All right. And the last standing update, David, this is a big one, at least on my end. What do you make of the report that Antonio Conte isn't interested in the Real Madrid job? And will Chelsea ever get rid of him?
I got to say, you guys know that I love Conte. I really do. And look, you know, what a difference a year makes. Because this time last year, we were talking about Conte being in the conversation as the best manager in the world. And look, I'd be the first one to tell you, he disappointed me a lot this season at Chelsea, especially some of his attitude and a little bit how he behaved and, you know, maybe a lack of effort and whatnot. But I have to say, I find it absolutely hilarious that Conte wouldn't be interested in Real Madrid for the reasons that have been posted. And I think they are legit. Like, he feels he wants to be at a team where he can really put his stamp on, and, you know, he's afraid that he will, with a World Cup year, he won't have time to really put the stamp on the team. Now, you know, for years he complained about the lack of talent that he has, so here's finally the opportunity to have arguably the best squad in the world, and he passes it up for that. So I have to say, God bless Conte. I think a lot of his best qualities are also his biggest flaws. The other thing is, look, Conte is very stubborn. He's not going to leave Chelsea until that clause is paid to him. And, you know, I've read different reports on it. I've read somewhere that it's 15 million or 20 million euro. Like, God bless his agent, who did a great job using the leverage to get him this clause. So, you know, Conte, as it stands now, he still is the Chelsea manager. And I think, you know, one sign that Chelsea is moving closer to finding his replacement is if we read the announcement that they have sacked Conte and paid him the clause. I think this won't be a Napoli situation where they announce Ancelotti while they have Sarri on the payroll. I mean, the situations are a little bit different because Sarri has a very low wages, relatively speaking. So Napoli can afford to have both, while if Chelsea announces a new manager, they have to sack Conte and pay him that clause. So, you know, Alex, I think you're going to have to suffer a little bit more with Conte. I also think there's a slight chance he stays. I wouldn't rule it out altogether. I just find the way he's so stubborn about this reminds me of a story in his book on how Van Gaal, of all people, was one of his role models. And maybe this would have been funny this time last year to think about that. Maybe now you can kind of see it a little bit more. And one thing that Conte really liked about Van Gaal was how inflexible and domineering he was on situations. And it seems like Conte is living up to that now. So again, I think Conte is going to keep us entertained for the rest of the summer. Maybe it's a little bit for the coming weeks, not the whole summer. Maybe for me, I see a little bit more irony in this because I'm not a Chelsea fan like you. So now let's get to our standard Twitter questions. We're going to keep these standing updates because everyone keeps asking about these. As the summer evolves, you know, I have a feeling some of these may change. There might be some new players or coaches who become the center attention. So it's okay. You don't have to send us in questions on these three subjects because we'll keep doing them. But if you want us to discuss anything else, please use the Calcioland hashtag. As always, we look for Serie A questions on transfers for any leagues. If you have questions on journalism or you have questions on music, TV, or film, please send them with the Calcioland hashtag. So which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, let's start with a hot ticket here. David, why would a club pay more than Torreira's $25 million exit clause to sign him from Sampdoria, and who does he remind you of?
So I got a lot of questions on Torreira today, and today Di Marzio linked him to Arsenal. He had linked previously to them, but today they made contact and they're starting to work on the negotiation here. So let's start first with the one question that I've been getting a lot is why has no club activated the 25 million euro exit clause? On paper, it's very low when you look at Torreira's ability. He's very young. There's definitely going to be a resale value. There's a very good chance that he's going to be worth a lot more than 25 million, even in like a year or two, that could already happen. But I think one thing that's underrated about exit clauses is the vast majority of them, when you activate them, you can only pay them in one installment, and you usually have to do it within 60 days of the clause when you activate it. Now, most transfers that are, I would say, over 15 million are usually done in installments. So club pay these over multiple years. So I think that's one of the main reasons why that hasn't been activated as well. So now there's also reports that a club could pay more than 25 million. And why would they do that? It goes to the fact that they could negotiate to pay, say, 30 million over multiple years as opposed to paying 25 million within 60 days of activating. So Napoli is looking at Torreira, but now Arsenal is in the mix. I think he'd make a lot of sense for them. There's two players that he reminds me of, and they're pretty different players, so I think this speaks pretty highly about Torreira's ability. One player, and it's an easy one, it's Verratti because of their size, and both of them actually played for Pescara. Interestingly, Torreira, when he was at Pescara, started as a striker, and that's when he was moved back to the midfield. He plays a little bit like Verratti, has good passing ability and whatnot. The other player that he reminds me of a little bit is Arturo Vidal, and this one might surprise people because their body type, they're pretty different. Torreira runs a ton. One thing that always stood out to me about Vidal in his prime, especially his first two seasons at Juve where he was so brilliant, is Vidal was always on the TV screen. If you were watching him, he was everywhere, always around the ball. Torreira has great pace, really a very dynamic player. So if you're looking to get an idea of what he plays like, those are the two comparisons that I would use.
All right, David, next question. How would Alvaro Morata adapt to Sarri ball?
Yeah, I almost feel like you're an expert on this. You've seen Morata at Chelsea. I know Napoli was your adopted team last season. It sounds like Roma is tempting you now. So I'll give you my take, and then maybe you can give yours as well. When I think of the two strikers that really did well for Sarri at Napoli, we had Dries Mertens, who did great as the false nine after Milik got hurt. But even better than Mertens to me was Higuain with Sarri. To me, that was absolute beauty, poetry in motion to see Higuain play for Sarri. For me, I always thought of Higuain as just a goal scorer, not really a poacher, but just someone really known for scoring a classic number nine. But at Napoli, Higuain was so involved in the run of play. I thought, you know, Higuain playing for Sarri was not only the best striker in Serie A, he was the best player, period. So of the two, I would say Morata's a little bit more similar to Higuain, of course, for body type, but also, you know, Morata, and maybe was not so much at Chelsea, but in general was known for his ability to help the team and track back and also be involved in the run of play. Now, the one big difference, and this is a positive that I would say Morata has over Higuain, Morata, at least at Juventus and the Champions League, had a great track record of scoring against the top teams in Europe. Higuain, not so much. I mean, against Spurs, but that was in the round of 16, and against Spurs, so not the Real Madrid and the Barca's of the world. So if I had to say, I could see some parallels between Morata and the way Higuain played for Sarri. I have a feeling this question was asked hypothetically if Sarri is going to be at Chelsea. And if I was any Chelsea striker, I'd be very excited by this prospect. So I have no updates on Sarri and Chelsea. Again, I think you'll know that it's a sign that Chelsea are coming very close to hiring a new manager if you start hearing a lot more buzz on Conte's buyout being exercised. Do you got any thoughts on how Morata would do with Sarri? You're an expert on both by now.
Yeah, you know, I definitely do think that Morata could do well under Sarri, which almost goes for any offensive player that has talent. And I think he should honestly take a couple things from Higuain and a couple things from Mertens. Obviously, Mertens is not a real striker, so Mertens was never asked by Sarri to have his back to a center back to hold up play like that. Much more almost acting as a midfielder in the triangular passing. Higuain, as you said, much more of a real striker. Morata would just have two things. He would just need to finish better, which comes with confidence. And I admit it, I was hard on Morata this year, and I regret some of the harshness I had towards Morata because he really did deal with a tough year. But the number one thing he still will have to work on, and even if Sarri asks him to play more like Mertens and not have his back to a center back, he's got to work on his strength in the Premier League. It's less of a Sarri thing, it's more of a Premier League thing. This year, Morata flopped around like a fish, and it drove people absolutely crazy. So I do think Sarri's system will help him with that. I think, you know, he's a good passer, he's got good feet. You look at him, he's kind of a big guy, but he's actually got some midfielder feet, which, you know, I attest to him being Spanish. But nonetheless, he'll have to work on his strength. But I do think that Sarri would be great for Morata's confidence for sure. So, David, next question. We don't often get to talk about this team, but what are the chances that West Ham signed Felipe Anderson, and did Lazio wait too long to sell him?
Very, very, very good question. So Felipe Anderson isn't going to extend his contract with Lazio. During the season, he clashed with Simone Inzaghi at times. I think it's very likely that he'll leave the club this summer. West Ham have been interested in him. I know they were also linked to Pastore. As far as I heard, there wasn't that much momentum for Pastore signing with West Ham. So Felipe Anderson would make a lot of sense. I think, you know, he'll still be expensive. He's not coming off his best season, but he'll still be expensive. One thing that stood out to me about Felipe Anderson is he's evolved as a player. Before Simone Inzaghi, he was really known as a great offensive weapon, a great dribbler. I think Simone Inzaghi made him a little bit more of a complete winger, better defensively. Now, you know, as far as the question, did Lazio wait too long to sell him? Look, it wasn't long ago that he was linked to Manchester United and other clubs for a transfer fee of 50 million euro. You know, so in that sense, they probably won't get that amount. I still think they'll get a really good return. I would imagine 30 million euro or more. But you have to also take into account that the more time passes, the more Lazio has amortized his value on their own books. And the other thing that you shouldn't underestimate is, I'm going to quote Herm Edwards, you play to win the game at the end of the day. And Lazio keeping Felipe Anderson, sure, they could have maybe sold him for 10 million more 1 or 2 years ago, but they got to keep him and get his performances. Again, he wasn't his best a year, but he still contributed. And look, Lazio came like 5 minutes away from making a Champions League spot. So say they had qualified, they would have more than made up that money by keeping him. But again, when I look at the amortized value and all, I don't think Lazio would go back in time and change things, assuming they still get a big return for him. I actually would be intrigued to see how he does in the Premier League. My guess is he'd do fairly well if he went there.
Certainly loads of talent. And yeah, I agree. Lazio did it the right way. They're not doing it to make Felipe Anderson's career better. They're trying to win themselves. And he was really bright when he came back from injury this year. So, David, next question. Who is the best right back in Serie A? It seems like a scarce position.
Yep, I love this question, and it's very true. You know, this is something you hear me say on the podcast a lot. I think in general, not just right back, but wing back position as a whole is very scarce on the market. There's not many very good of them. So even when fans criticize their own wing backs, and I may be talking about you, Alex, you got to also keep in mind it's not that easy to find better ones. So when I was thinking who are the best ones in Serie A, I could come up with three names. I might be forgetting someone, and for different reasons. We have Hizaj on Napoli, one of Sarri's key players, was with him at Empoli and Napoli. Wouldn't surprise me if a club is able to get Sarri and a club with deep pockets if they go and get and exercise. He has a 50 million exit clause, which is really steep, but I think he's only 23. I could be wrong. Very good defensive right back. There's not that many wing backs that are good defensively these days. He's definitely one of them. The flip side is he's not great offensively. Who's on the polar opposite of this spectrum is João Cancelo, who was on loan at Inter and now back at Valencia. He's the opposite. Great offensively, really can't defend much at all. I thought in the second half of the season he was devastating for Inter. I thought he was probably the best right back in Serie A. And then the other one that we have is Florenzi on Roma, who I think combines a little bit of the qualities of both. He's not a great crosser, without a doubt he's not, but he's not an afterthought offensively either. Roma's making progress on signing him to an extension, and he's leveraging a high salary because, again, it's a scarce position. I also would mention, if he were healthy, Conti, who is at Milan. I thought he was one of the most important additions on paper last summer, but he barely played because of injury. So it is a pretty scarce position, though, overall.
All right, next Twitter question, David. What are the odds Juve signs João Cancelo, and how would he fit there?
So actually, I think he would fit really well because Juve has been weak at the right back position since Dani Alves left. As I mentioned, João Cancelo is a brilliant player offensively, and I actually think Allegri could do work magic with him. One thing about Allegri is he's very good at giving tactical discipline to his players. I think João Cancelo could really use this, could really improve in that regard. And Allegri has also shown a track record of improving players' defense. So for his career, that would make a lot of sense. Now, for Juve, this isn't going to be an easy deal because we saw Wolves, who have a strong connection to João Cancelo, made a huge offer to sign him, but the player isn't that eager to go join him. Juve is trying to get him on a similar deal that Inter used, so a loan with an option to buy. Let's see if Juve inserting a forced option to buy gets them over the finish line. I think Juve is going to do their usual thing to try to get the player's approval first and then try to finagle a deal. Although I got to be honest, a lot of times that strategy hasn't fully worked. But I think Juve is rightfully targeting him. I have to say, on the subject of Cancelo, our good friend Thousand Names, our Oracle for Predictions, had a hilarious tweet on this. So I'm going to read it. I'm going to read it first in Italian and then in English for our listeners. It really cracked me up. He wrote, "In molti non si rendono conto della storicità dell'operazione Cancelo. La Juve poteva prenderlo già l'anno scorso, ma non era certa dell'adattamento al calcio italiano. E che ha fatto? Marotta l'ha lasciato andare in prestito in una piccola come un Zaza qualunque l'Inter." So what Thousand Names, and look, he is kind of a troll, likes to really joke around on Twitter. He said, "Most people don't realize how historic this Cancelo deal could be for Juve. They could have easily signed him last year, but they weren't certain if he would adapt to Italian football. So what did Marotta do instead? He let him go on loan to a small team as if he were like a Zaza type player, and that team is Inter. So it's tongue-in-cheek, but brilliant tweet. It cracked me up. I'm looking forward to having our friend Thousand Names back on the podcast. While we're on the subject of Juan Cancelo, a player in Serie A, I forgot to mention a lot of people asked me about Torreira, if I think his lack of size could be an issue in the Premier League, and I actually think that is possible. I do think, though, you know, how fast and dynamic he is, he could overcome that, but he is very small. I think he's 5'7" in American height, so I think that makes him like just a 1.65 meters or something like that. He is a very small guy. Alex, off the top of your head, are there any really small midfielders in the Premier League that do quite well? I was trying to think, but you know the league much better than I.
This player's not like him, but N'Golo Kanté is the only player I can think of that's that short and that does well. I mean, Jack Wilshere is not that tall, but he's also not that good. So,
I was thinking Kanté, so that is a good shout-out. I definitely think there are some comps there as well, so I don't think it would be a huge detriment.
Yeah, where there's a will, there's a way. That's what I'll say about it. All right, David, next one. This is the second time, I'm pretty sure, second episode in a row, a listener has used Pjaka as a prop. Could Pjaka be used in a deal for Federico Chiesa?
Yeah, so someone suggested that he could be used with Lazio along with Rugani for Milinkovic-Savic. And look, you know, it comes down to this. We've talked, we got a lot of great feedback on all the chats that we had on amortization and transfers, how they work, and we'll get into it a little bit more. But it's similar to Milinkovic-Savic. Like, in my opinion, if Fiorentina were to sell Chiesa, and they really don't want to, they'd like to keep it. And I think he understands, too, that it would make sense for him to stay one more season. If he's sold, it's going to be for a huge cash deal because then Fiorentina will turn a huge profit. But it's not out of the question that Pjaka, you know, in a wink-wink deal, Juve is like, okay, we'll pay you this much for Chiesa, and then a week after, Pjaka joins Fiorentina in a separate deal. It also is possible that Pjaka just goes to Fiorentina on loan and Chiesa stays there as well. I think Juve would like to see Pjaka get some Serie A experience. They sent him to Schalke in the Bundesliga, but he needs to play in Serie A more. So let's see what happens there. It's also not out of the question that Allegri just wants to keep him, maybe for the summer retreat, see how the first half of the season goes before loaning him out in January.
All right, next Twitter question, David. Who will be the starter at Juve between Perin and Szczęsny?
So, a great question. Let's stick to facts, and then I'll give my opinion. If we go just based on the salaries that Juve paid these players, it's going to be Szczęsny. So, Juve signed Szczęsny last season to be Buffon's heir apparent in waiting. They wanted him to be at the club for a season under Buffon and learn the ropes. They gave him a salary of close to 4 million euro, which is on the highest end of Juve at the club. That's like players like Marchisio when he was at the top, Khedira, the guys that earn more, the Dybala and the Higuains of the world. So they paid him a lot, definitely paid him like a starter to be a backup last season. Perin, on the other hand, the reports on the Matsu site are his salary is going to be 2.5 million, so considerably less than Szczęsny. So for what it's worth, and that is a play on words, if we go by salary, it's going to be Szczęsny. I also think, me personally, I think Szczęsny is a better keeper. This sounds shocking to a lot of Premier League fans that think of him as his time at Arsenal, and I totally understand that, because I have to be honest, before Szczęsny played for Roma, I always saw him as a liability, was never impressed with him, but two seasons ago, I thought he was the best keeper in Serie A along with Donnarumma that year. I think Woj at Juve has done very well when he's played. I personally thought he was better than Buffon last season. So the way I see it, Szczęsny has done everything he can control to be the next starter. I've also said that I kind of find it ironic that the reason that it was put out there why Buffon isn't staying at Juve is they didn't want him to cast a shadow over Szczęsny this season. But guess what? Instead of doing that, Juve brought him competition long-term. So it seems a little bit awkward that would be the reason Buffon left. So my guess is Szczęsny is going to be the starter, but Perin's going to play a lot. Juve is in all competitions next season. I have a feeling they'll alternate a good amount. While we're on the subject of Perin, we talked about on the podcast on Wednesday, a lot of people asked why was the transfer fee so low, and it was announced today as 12 million euro plus 3 million in bonuses. Really low for a keeper of Perin's ability, and surprise, surprise, as we predicted on Wednesday's podcast, watch, there's going to be Juve players linked to Genoa. They'll probably go there, and don't be surprised if the fees are lower than you would expect, because again, from an accounting standpoint, making swap deals isn't nearly as advantageous as clean sales. So don't be surprised. Today we saw Mandragora linked to Genoa. Don't be surprised if he goes there on a deal where Juve has a buyback or something like that. If it's not Mandragora, it'll probably be some other player. So Genoa know what they're doing on the transfer market. They didn't undersell Perin. They're probably going to be getting some other players as part of it.
Ah, very interesting. All right, well, staying on keepers, David, if Juve can make it work with Szczesny and Perin, why are there reservations on Milan having both Donnarumma and Pepe Reina?
On the surface, this is a really good question, but I think, A, the financial situation that Juve and Milan are in are radically different. I don't know if it's really a good use of Milan's financial resources, with, again, we're going to find out more after the UEFA ruling, to be spending so much on keepers. Just to give you an idea, if you add up the salaries of Szczesny and Perin, the Donnarumma brothers, so Gigio and his brother, who kind of are a tandem, earn about the same, if not slightly more. So that's not even taken into account Pepe Reina, who is coming, and I think he's coming at least what Perin's salary is, maybe more, at Milan. So Milan would be paying like a small fortune to keep all three keepers. So for me, that's the big difference, because Gigio Donnarumma's paid a ton, and as part of that deal, his brother also got a pretty good salary. So I'm of the opinion that if a great offer came for Donnarumma, and if you paid attention to our podcast on Monday, he's a homegrown player, Milan could make a fortune on a sale of him, because they basically have no amortized value to account for with him. So I'm of the belief that if Milan can get rid of a lot of their financial issues by selling Donnarumma, I would kind of do it. And two, if you think about Donnarumma's performances last season, it's not as bad to give him up now than say the year before, because you're like, oh my God, we're giving up a great keeper. Now we just don't know what the scenario is going to be. So I get the question, but I think this, between the fact that the clubs are in very different positions financially and the salaries that come with them, I kind of see the situations a little bit differently.
All right, next Twitter question, David. Would Sassuolo winger Politano improve Inter?
Yeah, if he's coming in as a bench player, sure, I think he'd improve there. I like Politano. I thought he was intriguing last season, especially in the second half of the season. He did well for Sassuolo. I just don't know how much he moves the needle. I mean, he's probably an upgrade on what we saw from Candreva last season, but is he someone that really improves Inter? I think Malcolm, who from Bordeaux, is someone that would definitely move the needle more, but Inter's going to need more depth for sure. It just depends how much Politano is going to cost them. Maybe it makes more sense for them to invest elsewhere.
All right, next Twitter question. David, who would be a bigger loss for Serie A between Nainggolan and Hamsik?
It's a good question. Both of them have been linked to a potential move to China. Now, Hamsik was a fantastic player for Napoli, but I got to be honest, this might sound like a hot take. I believe had Sarri played Zielinski more and started him over Hamsik way more often, maybe Napoli would have won the title last season. I think Hamsik, for most of the season, I'm not going to say he was a liability for Napoli, but he definitely wasn't someone that moved the needle in a positive way. He did have a stretch towards the middle of the season where he did well, but he started poorly and finished slow. I think Hamsik is 31. I think age is starting to catch up for him. Interesting, though, he did meet with De Laurentiis, Napoli's president. Napoli's holding out for $30 million. for him. I'm not sure they'll be able to get that. But the revelation that came out of that is that Hamsik would also be open to move, not necessarily to China, but to another European team. So maybe a team goes for the reputation that Hamsik has and makes a big offer for that. I got to be honest, I'm not sure how great of a player they would get. Now, it would be a big loss for Serie A in the sense that we'd call him a bandiera, so a symbol for a club. He's basically played his whole career for Napoli, but it sounds like he wants a change of scenery. Nainggolan, I don't think is as bad shape as Hamsik. I thought he had an up and down season. He definitely wasn't vintage Nainggolan like we had seen in the past. I think he's also slowing down. His lifestyle might be catching up to him. If Roma can get a big offer for him, I don't think they'd be opposed to moving him. But then you have to ask yourself if Nainggolan would accept the transfer. This is someone who turned down moves to the Premier League because he loved the sun and Rome. I don't know how much money would have to come from China for him to agree to a move there. There's also reports of Inter being interested in him. Spalletti, his former manager, probably got the most out of him of any manager Nainggolan had. Would love to have him back, but I'm not sure, you know, it would have to be a big offer. Ben Inter has their financial fair play issues of their own to worry about. So I would say Nainggolan, if he were to leave Serie A, would be a bigger loss as far as performance, but as far as like the symbolic move of Napoli losing their leader, I think that could be worse though.
You know, if Nainggolan and Maurizio Sarri leave Serie A, that's a lot of cigarette sales that are going to really go down
well
the
said.
Tube. All right, David.
Well said.
So last Twitter question here. Let's move away from football. You dropped some great news on us this week. Once again, congratulations on the new gig. What can we expect from your articles at The Athletic?
So I'm very excited. Thank you. So first of all, you know, anytime something like this happens, I want to take this opportunity to thank all the people that helped me along the way. Obviously, of course, Di Marzio gives me a huge platform. I've said many times the Di Marzio gig is hard. It's a lot of work. Basically, my summers, I feel like I'm always on call. But I've always also believed in myself, and I knew it would give me a huge platform. I realized the vast majority of the followers I have on Twitter are as a result of that. But the reason I do the work is I want people to then check out my own content. And, of course, the podcast is a big reason of that. That's been a formula that's worked really well. I also want to thank, you know, all the my loyal readers, and some of them go back with me a very, very long time. And I want to thank, you know, my staff on Di Marzio site. If you guys are noticing, they are doing the vast majority of the work. They're doing great work, and that allows me to do more gigs like The Athletic. So we had on Monday, we had the managing editor, George Karashi, on the podcast. He gave you an idea of what The Athletic's all about. It's a premium content site, so you do have to have a subscription. So, you know, this is the first time in my career that I'm going to ask people to consider spending money to get my work, but I'm telling you, it's really worth it, even if you don't like my work, because The Athletic is really a great site. There are no ads, no annoying videos. Aside from me, there are really some great writers on there. If you're into American sports, not only do you get a great soccer coverage for the purposes of The Athletic, on the football soccer page, there is Paolo Bandini and Hunter Graham and other really good writers, much better than I. But if you're into American sports, the coverage on the NBA, the NFL, and whatnot is really outstanding. Right now you have a special where you can get it for $3 a month. That's really the cost of a Starbucks coffee, less than a beer in most places. So if you're into quality writing, I can't recommend it enough. I would tell you this even if I wasn't writing on them. Now, what can you expect from me on the site? It's going to be something a little bit different. You guys that read my work are familiar on Calcio Mercato. I kind of write a little bit about what I want, various topics. Sometimes it's a player profile. This week I wrote about the triangle with Sarri and Conte. So I kind of pick a topic like that. On ESPN, you guys have the transfer rumor Raiders, where I'm really just following the format and just writing about the likelihood of deals happening or not. On The Athletic, it's going to be a little bit different. I'm going to go a little bit deeper in the transfer window. I'm going to try to highlight some different angles and deals. The format of the column, and the first one should be posted shortly, maybe even today. For those of you that are familiar with the Sunday papers in the U.S., you know, I used to love reading the Sunday papers because there were these longer columns on the NBA or baseball and whatnot, and they would kind of have some big stories and then some quick notes on various topics. A lot of my favorite writers would do it that way. So on the column that's going to be posted shortly, you're going to have some insight on the Milinkovic-Savic deal, Higuain-Icardi, this crazy swap, why it won't happen, but why I think it's been leaked to the media. So you're going to get a little bit more in-depth coverage, maybe some things you hadn't considered in a transfer. So I think you'll enjoy it. Let's see how it goes. I hope to be covering a lot of Serie A on The Athletic. So if you're interested in subscribing, I really appreciate your support. I'm going to tweet out the link later when they do the first article. I hope you follow me on this journey. It really is an exciting site, and I'm really thrilled to be there. So thank you to everyone that helped me along the way. So one thing that's always free is our podcast, but we really appreciate your support and helping it grow. As I mentioned, Alex and I have been putting a lot of work into it. I've put in a considerable amount of money in the podcast invest to make it sound good. Alex in the studio. I want to make sure Alex is compensated for his time working on this. So I put in a lot into the podcast. We're looking to start making more of that money back. We've had revenues, but we'd like to get to the next level, and you can really play a big part in this. So I really appreciate everyone that's tweeted about the podcast, why you like it. I love the reviews we get on iTunes. You don't realize how important those are for the algorithm on iTunes. So if you're listening to us on your iPhone, it takes 2 seconds. Please leave us a 5-star rating now. You want to leave a comment, we read them all, and we appreciate them. So please keep supporting the podcast. So since it's a Friday, we're kind of going to do a free format. I wanted to ask you an NBA question, Alex. That's been a lot on my mind. I tweeted about this yesterday. I think I was a little bit too enthusiastic. So yesterday I tweeted, if I set the over-under on the amount of titles that Jason Tatum is going to win, and I stress on the Celtics, at 2.5, what would you take? I think that was a little bit too aggressive, because that means if you're picking the over that you think the Celtics will win 3 titles with Tatum. So I'm going to recalibrate it with you, Alex, and I'm going to ask you, if I put the over-under at 1.5, so I'm saying to go over, the Celtics would have to win 2 titles for Tatum, what would you pick and why?
Oh, that's so tough, because 1.5, I feel like, is the number that Vegas would put on any player of Tatum's caliber and also age, which is important. Obviously, he was just a rookie this season. You know what? Normally, David, I would say under, because you can have a career like Steve Nash had, Allen Iverson, be an amazing player, a Hall of Famer, and never win a title. Maybe not even get close. I mean, people might not know. Chris Paul, this was his first Western Conference Finals ever. So you can be a Hall of Fame caliber player and never even sniff a title. With that said, I'm going to take the over. I'm going to take the over for 2 reasons. And for anybody who doesn't know, I am not a Celtic. They're not my number one team. I am a Celtics fan, but I'm not being a homer here. I'm being objective. Jason Tatum, not only is he young, and not only is he insanely poised. I mean, I'm 28. He's 20. He's so much more mature than I am. It's not even funny. So his composure, his poise really make me think that not only will he help the Celtics get far, but he'll also be a reason that they do win titles. But the second reason is the direction the Celtics are going. And maybe I can't say the direction LeBron's going, because he's still so insanely good, but the uncertainty of will LeBron even be in the Eastern Conference. The Celtics look like that next team to be the dominant team in the Eastern Conference, even over the 76ers. Brad Stevens is a huge reason why I'm taking the over. They just have such a damn bright future. It's really encouraging being in Boston, being an NBA fan, having the Celtics play in this town. And obviously it goes deeper than just who Jason Tatum is. But the fact, David, that they got this far, they almost got to the damn NBA Finals without Kyrie Irving and without Gordon Hayward. That is insanely impressive. So I am going to take the over. There's a lot of risk in in saying that. He could go on to go to have 10 All-Star game appearances. He could even be an MVP and not get close to the finals. But knowing who he is, knowing the direction the Celtics are headed, I am going to take the risk. I'm going to say over. So what about you?
Yeah, well, I'm a Celtics homer, and I think the fact that originally I had a 2.5 proves it. But I'm with you. I agree. And, you know, I try to be a reality-based person. I'm going to echo some of the things you said. You mentioned Brad Stevens. I'm a firm believer that the Celtics could pretty much trade Kyrie, trade Hayward. I wouldn't be that upset, but I'd be really upset if they lost Brad Stevens. Like, I think he is the absolute secret sauce for the Celtics, makes everything go. And the other reason I'm going to say it is Danny Ainge. As long as he's at the helm, you know the Celtics are going to be run incredibly well. So they are the reason why I think Tatum is going to win at least two titles with the Celtics. Tatum's just 20. They're going to have him under control for quite some time. I think the Celtics are just incredibly well managed. I think they've really kind of followed the Warriors' blueprint. They are starting to be a team as good as them, and I think they're going to be not just in the Eastern Conference. I think they're going to be the dominating team in the NBA for a while. So with that out of the way, I want to close on a more somber note, and this is important to me. So this morning, as I was coming into work, I read about Anthony Bourdain passing away. At first, I didn't know that it was a suicide, and at first, you know, my reaction was like, oh my God, did the cholesterol catch up to him? Because I used to love watching his show where he's eating all this crazy food. And then I heard about the suicide. So there's a lot of thoughts that I have on this. For one, you know, I appreciate all the great content he put out, his books, his TV shows. They've been a big part of my life. You know, show that I always like, I love watching his shows with my wife at home, and I want to take a break from Trump and all the news and get into a different frame of mind. I always really enjoyed his show. So I'm going to miss his content. I thought he did a great job. Like, his loss to me, I felt like I lost a friend, like someone that's filled so much time. I immediately texted my wife to let her know. And, you know, it's definitely a sad thing. And I've been reading that, you know, this is a time where, you know, suicides are increasing. The rate of suicide has really gone up a lot. And when I try to think of why this is happening, I really believe that it's a lack of human connections that we have. I think social media, cell phones and whatnot have really in a lot of ways connected us, you know, instantaneously, but we're losing that human connection so much. People feel more and more isolated. You know, a few weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, I talked about the Nine Inch Nails physical sale of tickets. Like, I stood in line for 6 hours to buy these tickets, and it was awesome to talk to so many people, total strangers, that had one thing in common with me, which was the love of music and a band. And, you know, that was really one of the points of why they did it that way. They really wanted to promote human connection. And now I try to do that as much as possible. It might sound really stupid. Like, instead of using the ATM, I go to the teller at the bank by my office. I always try to talk to the person there. I was traveling for work. Instead of checking my bag at the kiosk and just leaving there, I went to talk to a person. Like, it actually felt really good. I'm trying to do that more and more. So I would suggest that people try doing that. It feels really good to have a human connection with other people. And the other thing, my last thought on Anthony Bourdain, you know, it's pretty similar to when Chris Cornell passed away, you know, around this time last year when we were starting the podcast, and he was an artist that I really, really loved. You look at people like Cornell and Anthony Bourdain from the outside, you'd think those people are missing nothing. They're celebrities. They're making big money. They're good-looking guys. You're like, almost anyone would trade their life with them, but you just never know. I'm a firm believer that no matter how great the circumstances on the outside world, the pain we each feel inside is the worst pain in the world, because it's our own and it's the one that we feel. So it doesn't matter if you're a celebrity, super rich or whatnot, like, ultimately that pain is the strongest. So, you know, if there's someone in your life that's struggling, you know, someone that's having a rough time, you know, you can make such a difference by reaching out to them. So, you know, I know it's a somber note to end the podcast on this week, but I think it's important, and I want to take the opportunity to thank everyone that supports the work that we do. We're going to be back next week with 3 more episodes, so let's keep the momentum going, and I hope everyone takes care of one another.